Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the investor call of Credit Access Grameen Limited to discuss the Q3 and 9 months FY 2019 results. Today, we have with us from the management, Mr. Uday Kumar Hebbar, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Diwakar B.R., Chief Financial Officer. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Uday Kumar Hebbar for opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for taking out your precious time and joining us for the investor conference call to discuss Credit Access Grameen's Q3 FY 2019 performance. We'll start our presentation with the key operational highlights of Q3. We acquired 2.82 lakh new customers during this quarter. This is an increase of close to 60% on YOY basis when compared to Q3 of previous year. Our borrower base stands at 22.61 lakhs as of December 18, and this is an increase of 36.6% on YOY basis when compared to Q3 previous year. The disbursement during this quarter were 1,762 crores, with the growth of 36% over the same period last year. The gross loan portfolio at the end of December 18 stands at 685 crores, which is growth of 49.3% on YOY basis when compared to Q3 previous year. Our portfolio growth was mainly driven by new customer and renewal of the existing customers. Our on-time collection efficiency stands at almost 99%. This was 96% close to during last same period during the December 17. Our new geographies, Goa, Kerala, Odisha, Union Territory of Puducherry, where we started operations during the start of this year, already have over 10,000 customers and 35 branches. We'll continue to further penetrate and expand in these geographies, including our existing geography. As of December 18, our retail finance portfolio stood at 200 crores, which comprises 3.29% of our total portfolio. We have opened 143 branches during this financial year as compared to 79 during the previous year, and these branches will also deliver for our growth. We have further improved our positive ALM mismatch even in this quarter. Our average maturity stands at 13 odd months, and average maturity of liabilities is 23 months, which was 15 months and 21 months respectively during previous quarter. We have a healthy cash position of 917 crores and have a drawable sanction of 1,431 crores, which can be availed based on our requirement. This sanction comprises facility from banks and FIs and direct assignment securitization, what we could do. We do not have any exposure to commercial paper borrowing, nor we have taken borrowings from mutual funds. A major part of our borrowings were long-term borrowings from FIs, FPIs, and development like IFC, NABARD. During this quarter, we have expanded our fundraising resource base by entering into direct assignment and securitization transactions, which together comprise 16.14% of our total liability mix as on December 18. We have 24 months of positive cash flow and even enough sanctions in place to maintain growth guidance for next three months without any fresh sanction. When coming to financials, our NII stood at 213.87 crore for Q3 FY 2019 and has shown growth of 91% year-on-year basis. PAT stood at 99.76 crore for Q3 FY 2019 and has grown a growth of 58% YOY basis when compared to Q3 FY 2018. Our marginal cost of borrowing for the quarter increased by 142 basis points to 10.37% as compared to last year. We consider this as a temporary one-time aberration because of a large high-cost borrowing we borrowed. Whereas our 12-month marginal cost is 9.63% and weighted average cost reduced by 227 basis points compared to last financial year to 9.36%. Our asset quality remained very healthy. Our GNPA at December was 1.2% and NNPA is zero, which was 1.19% and zero respectively in December 17. We have made provision to the tune of 1.63% on our gross portfolio under ECL methodology, which includes management overlay. Our efforts to continuously improve efficiency to reduce costs have resulted in gradual decrease in cost-to-income ratio. cost income ratio for Q3 FY19 is 31.9%, which is a decrease of 630 basis points on YoY basis when compared to Q3 FY18. Operational expense ratio for Q3 FY19 is at 5.2%, which is an increase of 30 basis points on YoY basis when compared to Q3 FY18. This margin increase is attributable to expansion during the current financial year. However, I would like to mention that 5.2 operational expense ratio is amongst the best in the industry. With this, I come to an end of our quarterly update. I open the forum for questions. Please to ask any queries. Myself and Divakar, CFO here, will be very happy to take this question and answer suitably.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Renish Bua from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Congratulations on good set of numbers.
Good morning.
Sir, a couple of questions. One on the AUM mix. So basically, our non-income generation mix is actually increasing, and which is, largely driven by the increasing share of the home improvement loans, which now close to stands at 15% of the mix versus 5% a year back. So can you please throw some light on, what type of customer segments are these and which geography are driving this home improvement loan, or it is at the Pan India level?
Sure. Only one question. Okay. Renish, thank you. This is basically to our customers who have wanting to build sanitation or bathroom or improve their homes, because we have a large set of experienced old customers who would keep enhancing their lifestyle or a home improvement requirements. So that is why it is non-income generation, it is within the JLG. So therefore, this aberration of between 15 to 20% is continue to happen, because almost 20% will be our non-income generation, which moves up and down during the during the first quarter. It would go up to almost 18%, and last quarter it may come to 80% or so. So that variation will happen. It's home improvement is basically sanitation and a small home improvement where they will add a wall or build toilet or build a bathroom like that. So this is in the JLG group of lending.
Okay, sir. I understood that it's under JLG model. But I mean, is there any criteria wherein we will decide, so after second cycle or third cycle, we'll give home improvement loan, or it will be like even for a new customer, we might give a home improvement loan?
To clarify that, this as you know, our loans are provided under the limit to the customers where based on their lifestyle requirement. Life cycle requirements. First loan always a income generation loan, and over a period they can enhance the limit. They can actually use for multiple purposes for their day-to-day requirements, like home improvements or the children education or medical emergencies. So it is under that, and only for the experienced customers.
Totally. So it is fair to assume that it will be only after the customer completes the first cycle.
Maybe half cycle, and then afterwards first cycle. Half cycle, they will start getting a small loan, and where after two or three cycle, they will actually take for this type of home improvement, the higher cycle up to 25,000.
Okay, which is up to 25,000. What will be the average ticket size under home improvement?
It's actually about 15 to 18,000. It majorly goes for sanitation, which is 15,000 only.
Okay. So my second question, is on the gross NPA ratio. So basically, in this quarter, we have seen a slight, increase in the gross NPA ratio to 1.20. So can you please, share some more data, like what is the fresh slippages, which portfolio is driving these slippages, etc.
It's gross, you're talking gross NPA?
Yeah. So
yeah, it is 1.19 to 1.2, and the quarter on quarter basis it's increased by about 9 dips probably. It is basically the, we did the direct assignment and all, so which changes it, which changes a bit of your base, basically to the extent of direct assignment, the portfolio goes out of our book. It is basically arithmetic change. It's actually, there is no increase in the actual NPA.
Okay, so in absolute terms, you are saying it is flat.
Correct.
Okay, okay. And sir, if may I ask one last question on the retail finance book. So our book is now close to 200 crore, and we were been investing in this business from last one and a half year. So what is the basic ROA difference between the group lending and the retail lending? I mean, is there any difference first of all, or it's the ROA neutral business?
See, this is a new business. It will take at least 2 years time to get a steady status. So this is the first year of full operations what we started. But our estimation is that in a year third, it will be equivalent to group lending business.
Okay, in terms of the profitability.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. Okay, sir. That's it from my side, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Parag Jariwala from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead.
So my first question is, we have a press release for NCD issue as well. So are these tier 2 or it's a normal course of business?
Sorry, we couldn't hear Parag. Can you just make it a bit louder?
Yeah. What I'm saying is that we have issued a press release for an NCD issue of 3,000 crores. So are these going to be tier 2 bonds, or it is a normal course of business, normal borrowing?
Yeah, this will be normal borrowing, Parag. Effectively, we have always been raising NCDs as part of our fundraise and the liability mix. Effectively, this is more a technical arrangement of taking a one-time approval from the board so that we are in a position to regularly issue these NCDs as per the fundraising requirements, and it eases the requirement to go to the board every time to, for a specific issue. So this is more a composite approval we have taken, and as and when we avail the facilities from different investors, we should be taking this. These are all normal bonds and not tier 2.
Okay. And do we have any tier 2 or it's only equity?
We do have a little bit of tier 2. When I say very little bit, we have possibly, I can give you the exact number, just, we have a tier 2 of about, this is a very old one from Deutsche Bank, which we had availed in 2012, and also a little bit which we had availed from Capital First some time back. So the combined amount of the tier 2 currently that we have is around 36 crores. It's been there for some time, and that's the tier 2 we have currently.
Okay, and in terms of the securitization, what we do, are we booking all the incomes upfront?
And the securitization, as per the guidelines, we are not allowed to book any income upfront. It is amortized and recognized as and when the actual income is passed on from the trustee. As regards direct assignment, the regulation currently allows income booking upfront, which has been followed by us as per the Ind AS regulations in September quarter as also in December quarter.
Okay. So, Diwakar, isn't it fair to say that direct assignment is around 9% of our total borrowing? If we maintain this kind of a run rate, in next year also we were somewhere at around 9-10% hypothetically, then is it fair to say that the income would be lower next year, because most of the gains have been booked upfront, or entire gain has been booked upfront?
So So the way to look at this, Parag, is direct assignment and securitization is a normal course of our fundraising and liability mix. As and when the opportunities arise, we do it. And the recognition of this is more driven by the requirement of regulation and whatever is permissible. We sense that these two will be a part of our liability mix going forward. As and when they are undertaken, we'll be doing this. It's fair to possibly assume that we will continue on a regular basis, although we would not really be looking at any higher level of recognition on account of a larger level of transaction. We will be doing these transactions on a regular basis, on a sort of a calibrated basis, to ensure that the recognition also and the fund flow also from these two sources is smooth.
No, that's fine. Okay. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, an entity which has zero sell down, but in a year, if you increase the sell down to 10%, and on the 10% you are booking things upfront, obviously I'm not saying that it is permissible, and if this is the way regulator wants us to do, so I'm not disputing that. But to that extent, the profits or the income is higher, right?
Yes, yes. That's that extent, depending on the tenor. Yeah, it could be marginally higher.
Okay. And till what proportion you are comfortable as a off book and on book?
I mean, the current proportion is comfortable for us, especially on the DA side.
So around 15%.
Max. That's a max.
Okay. Okay. And if you guys can just talk about the competitive landscape, because when we see data, again, most of the MFIs have started growing very aggressively. Do you see any, losing in terms of standards, not by us, but by the industry in general? Are we seeing, a kind of a start of a cycle where, credit availability becomes very, very easy and there are some compromise on lending and etc.?
Parag, as you see us from over 5 to 6 years, we always worked on a very calibrated and very controlled growth what we had. And though sometime industry would have grown higher, but still we maintained our own way of expanding district by district, going deep, penetrating, and go to next district. And our way of expansion is always controlled and calibrated. We do have competitors, but the way we expand is the right quality implementation all the time in every district where we operate. Landscape is changing and expanding. Similarly, potential is also expanding. As you go more to rural, your potential is still very large. That is why we always supposed to go towards rural. When competition landscape, if you see, it's more at the urban landscape. So there is always a mismatch of this between us and the competitors. We don't see any immediate headwinds or anything for our expansion and growth. The previous last 4 or 5 years of the growth pattern, I think we will be able to maintain with our deep understanding of the rural and the deep penetration in the rural, and with the high level of customer connect, and the way we expand our business in our very calibrated and contiguous district model.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I'll come back in the queue if I have something else.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Anand Bhavnani from Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, just wanted to understand, as you are doing retail finance now, how are you measuring and managing the risk at family level? So there must be certain clients of yours who are already microfinance clients, and if their family members come and ask for a retail loan, how exactly does our system capture it, and how are we ensuring that at family level our exposures, combined exposure, is not beyond a certain limit?
Thank you, Anand. See, retail finance is implemented on our continued philosophy of growing with our customers or follow our customers' needs continuously. As you have a lot of customers who have been with us as a microfinance, they have ambition to become an entrepreneur. already to expand their business. To support that, we expanded this business. That means we will not give, as of now, all the loans what we give is only to our customers whom we are following actually over a period of time. That's the first factor. The second factor is we check the guarantor, basically the spouse or somebody in the family will be the guarantor. We check their both of their the lending or borrowing capacity or borrowing repayment capacity, already existing borrowing with the credit bureau, both the microfinance bureau as well as the consumer bureau, so that we have a large information available to us. And also, you know, this is done with a very high risk mitigation process where our risk manager, credit manager, go to their shops, assess them very carefully, and end-to-end technology with the cashless operations, and a completely different set of people who will do this business, not the microfinance team. It's different branches, different business setup, different employees, different technology, and different processes. So that is what the way we built this business, which is fundamentally for our own customers who have been experiencing. So it's the large extent, our most preferred customers are into this lending segment. So that is where the differentiator we have.
Okay. Sir, but in general, our understanding of whatever little understanding we have of the sector, generally there's high credit costs in case if we are funding people who are going to entrepreneurship for the first time among our client segment. So do we have any differential rates for the retail finance company, and what's the differential, and what is credit cost wise, how much more are we expecting in percentage terms? So the yields and credit cost, if you can compare for both these segments.
First, actually, you know, we will be providing this only for our best customers who have been with us. So the credit risk is less because she has been with us, and for her, we are the preferred lender. Two, if you look at this business, we don't have any acquisition cost, customer acquisition cost. This is the biggest in this segment. So that is why we actually provide this as a lower rate than the market, considering that we don't have any acquisition cost here. And since their experienced customer, the credit cost also low. Though we provide about 2% in our book, but if you see our last 1.5 years experience, our credit card is even less than 0.2%.
Okay. And sir, do you have any, you must be having some income to debt ratio at the client level that you kind of monitor. So at our overall portfolio level, do we have any such metrics that you can share with us as to the underlying, the way we have debt to GDP for countries, debt to income for our clients? Because here, the risk that we have is because we are continuously giving debt to the existing client, maybe his overall, we might be touching the limits of the overall borrowing capacity of the individual or the family. So how do we kind of monitor that and measure that?
You're talking about the group lending or the retail finance?
The retail finance now.
Retail finance, what happens is the limit what we give is based on their cash flow, not just the one. If it's based on the business, based on the cash flow, based on the entire, LTV is very clear actually. It's not that it's just like microfinance, you decide the limit. It's completely underwritten properly with the full data from them. So that is why we don't need to worry on that factor. But we can think about this as well as additional information as we grow, because it's more of a first year of our experience. We are experienced, and already we have kept a very strict level of the underwriting process here. But as we grow, definitely we can look at this type of analysis as well.
Thank you. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you.
Our next question is from the line of Agam Shah from KDS Trading. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations. Good set of numbers. Just had two questions. On the leverage side, so as we can see, leverage from 1.8x. So where do we see going ahead? What will be the cap in terms of leverage, and what will be the stable one to assume? And another question on the NCDs that we are raising 3,000 crore. So that will be through mostly to FIs and banks, or what will be the mix?
Okay. The first point which you asked in terms of leverage, so the way we have built our business plan essentially is that we will leverage debt to the maximum of four times. So we'll have 4:1. That's what is the maximum we'll go to. Currently, it is low on account of the IPO and, of course, the capital that was raised in the immediate past. And the fact that we did DA and securitization indicates that, you know, the current leverage is low. But as we go forward, this will inch up with our growth. That is the part. The second part with regard to this NCDs is that we haven't really had any experience, or we haven't raised anything from the domestic capital markets till date. All our NCDs that we have on our books and which we have done for the last 7-8 years has always been from foreign portfolio investors. So these bonds and these debentures that we have raised all through have always been from abroad, and we intend to, you know, go ahead on those lines. The limit that we have taken, as I explained earlier, was more for a composite approval for our fundraising in future.
I just clarify this approval we had taken in the AGM. It's a reiterating in the board because such a process that's all. If you go back.
Okay. So if I just can I squeeze in one follow-up question. So this NCD that we are raising, so can I say that you are raising 3,000 crores, so the amount of growth you are seeing going ahead is on a high growth phase? Because I think we are already having capital adequacy ratio of 40%. So is it that we are seeing a very high growth going ahead?
No. The growth numbers and what we have envisaged continue to remain the same. And what we have planned, and those are all going as per course, and there is no change. As mentioned earlier, this is more an approval taken from the board as part of our fundraising plans. I'll just clarify to ensure. Suppose if I need to raise a 200 crore NCD from a facility which I am taking next month, the process currently envisages that I need to take board approval. So to ensure that I don't call for a board meeting only for this purpose of this 200 crore, we have taken a composite approval, and that's the way to take it forward. So this is part of our process and this is part of our fundraising.
Okay. In terms of branch expansion, will be going ahead in Tamil Nadu and that side only, or is it any other specific area we are looking at?
Our always operate. I mean, expansion is based on the contiguous districts. Tamil Nadu, we already have almost 100 branches in all districts already. In fact, we already crossed over to Kerala and then started operations there. Similarly, Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh, we have almost finished, and we have moved to Odisha, similarly Goa. So that actually it continues to expand beyond our territories where we are operating. This year we added about 36 districts, and we reached about 156 districts. And next year again, based on our plan, we will get into another some 20-30 districts, which are more.
And what's the average rate for the branch expansion every year? Any targets?
Average?
Any targets to open branches, what, like, per year, any?
Normally, you know, if you see our last 4-5 years, we normally added about 30% of our existing infrastructure. So probably we aim to go in that similar fashion.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my side. Thank you. And all the best.
Thank you. Before we take our next question, we would like to remind participants to ask a question. You may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Smart Karma. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my question. And I just wanted to know on the on your sources of funds, you've seen a slight decline in your foreign sources. So what would that be due to?
Actually, if you look at the mix from the numbers, there is no reduction. There was one redemption of one of the NCDs. So that to that extent, we have to that extent there is a slight decrease. But if you look at the other mix, we have done DA securitization and also taken from FIs. So that has increased. So we only draw funds to the extent that we require, and as we continue to diversify our liabilities. This quarter, we have entirely utilized to ensure that we have all the lines fully covered in terms of our bank exposures, FIs, foreign sources, and BA and securitization. And to that extent, we will, we will continue to draw funds from multiple sources as per the requirements.
Right. So, would it be fair to say that the foreign sources are cheaper than the bank lines?
So, just to give you a picture, the way we look at our liability is that our business is essentially a regulated spread regime from RBI perspective. We need to maintain a net interest margin or regulatory spread of 10%. So the way we look at our mix of interest rates from foreign sources and bank funding is that we are within this particular regulatory spread. So even if the foreign sources are higher by 50 bips or 100 bips or whatever, we actually get cheaper funds from banks. And this mix ensures that we are well within the regulatory spread and we maintain our net interest income margins. So that's how we build the entire business.
Right, sir. And lastly, sir, what would be the share of your between the first and the second, first-time borrowers and second time? So in a loan mix, what would be the breakup?
We have about 30% first-time borrowers, and the balance will be second, third, and repeat borrowers.
Thank you. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Nischint Savate from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just a couple of questions. You know, on slide 33, we are able to see that your marginal cost of, I mean, I'm looking at numbers on a quarter-on-quarter basis, and your marginal cost of borrowing has gone up, you know, for obvious reasons. But your weighted average borrowing cost has actually come down. So just trying to understand, you know, what's happened over here.
Well, Nischint, yeah, it's actually, so the way we need to look at this is, while the marginal cost has gone up, I had mentioned during my earlier call that we have sanctions from FIs and all that. We had actually raised, we got a sanction of 1,000 crore from NABARD for 5 years, and we had availed half of that in the month of November, essentially, you know, because we wanted to demonstrate that we do have sanctions and all that, and it's a long-term funding. So the cost which is inched up is essentially on account of that particular loan, that's one. More importantly, as you know, we have had funds from various sources over including the foreign sources, the redemption of NCD, which was at a relatively higher rate, and also the relatively higher cost of funds, which have been coming down as a proportion compared to the funds that we are raising during this financial year, ensured that the average cost comes down while the marginal cost has gone up.
So when you say marginal cost, it is marginal cost of the loan sanction and not really the loan drawn. Is that the way to think about it?
It's actually marginal cost of the loan drawn. Because what happens is, we calculate it based on the actual availment. So while I have got a sanction of 1,000, I have only availed 500 crores. So this cost is essentially for what I have drawn. Whereas when you look at the overall cost, it includes the financial expenses for the period over a period of time, whether it's a quarter or an year. To that extent, because the high cost funds relatively are, you know, proportionally coming down as compared to the funds that are being raised at a lower rate, the overall cost has come down.
No, the funds are being raised at a higher rate, right?
Yeah, that was for the last quarter. Only for the last quarter.
Sure. Just moving back to slide 31, you know, if I look at point number D, which is others, the reconciliation between Ind AS and IGAAP suggests that there is a difference of around 11.5 crores. Is this solely because, I mean, and I guess in others, you know, there is some small item apart from DA income. Now, does it primarily mean that, you know, if you had not booked the DA income upfront, I mean, let's assume theoretically you've not done that, then your earnings would have been higher at a PBT level, would have been higher only by 11.5 crores?
No, the way to look at this is, I'll talk about the reconciliation later. The first part is, on simple terms, if you had not recognized the direct assignment transaction for this quarter, our PBT would have been lower by 22 crores. That's one part.
No, but the thing is that then these loans would be on balance sheet, right? So you would have earned some interest income, which I guess is getting reflected in the IGAAP number.
Yeah, that's fine. To that extent, if you do it, it will be, you know, reflected proportionately. But solely on the Ind AS basis, this particular DA transaction, which is recognized 25.33, if we had not recognized it and we had not done the transaction, essentially, or we have normatively booked it, the PBT would have been less by 22.1 crores.
No, no, but the thing is that if you assume, I mean, you take a scenario where not booked it, then if it were on books, you should have booked that income. I mean, if you do A and B both put together, you can't take only one scenario in isolation. My question is that then the impact is only 11.5 crores.
So the PBT is what we look at essentially from a perspective of what would have been, because this is upfront booking for the entire duration of the loan. So what would have been booked if we had not done this transaction would have been only to the extent of those 20 days or 10 days of income proportionate to the portfolio.
Then how do you explain the difference only of 11.5 crores?
Which slide you are referring to?
The same slide. I'm saying that, you know, you reported 27.33 under Ind AS, 15 point, which I guess is, you know, most of it is, you know, the DA income, 25.33 crores. The IGAP income is 15.87. So I'm assuming that IGAP income is the one that would have, that is the NIA that you would have booked in case you have deferred this. So I'm just saying that, look, the delta that is there at a PBT level, you know, assuming a scenario that you had not done not booked the DA income upfront, but assumed a deferred DA income, the delta on your at a PBT level is only 11.5 crores and not 24 crores, 22 crores, sorry.
I'll come back to you on this.
Sure, definitely.
We'll come back to you because there is one more element of comprehensive income issue there where the difference between what we assigned and what the current date of interest. That's some more calculation comes under Ind AS actually. But our straightforward calculation shows us that 22% income difference between these two. Because our DA was done in the almost last week of the December, that is why there is no income difference much because of that. But the calculation, the straightforward calculation shows clearly this is 22.1 crore difference. But because of some more Ind AS related calculation, which makes some changes, maybe we'll calculate and let you know separately.
Sure, I got it. The other thing is just moving on to slide 39. Now, when I look at your disbursement trend, this year it appears to be sort of, you know, more linear across quarters, while there has been some amount of seasonality that you have reported in the previous years. I'm not sure if it is because of retail business, because I think retail disbursements are still just around 4% of total disbursements. So, two parts, what is driving it, and can I sort of, you know, expect more flattish disbursements in the fourth quarter?
If you see, it is last quarter, it's jumped even last year also. We expect a bit of increased disbursement in the last quarter this year also. So that will remain. It's not because of retail or so. A bit of linear is because of one important aspect. If you see our entire expansion, 3/4 of our expansion we did in the three states, which is MP, Chhattisgarh, and Tamil Nadu. Mm-hmm. Which had some type sort of the new branches have taken up little late because of a bit of a difficult economic condition due to elections and all those things. So it has taken bit late. Otherwise, you would have gone there itself. And Tamil Nadu also, we had a bit of difficulty to take off because of the cyclone and all. Almost 1 month we had to mute it actually. So that's the reason. Otherwise, it will actually grow in the next quarter. Typically, the last quarter will be spike in our business as well. If you see all 3 years, there will be a spike in the last quarter.
Any impact of the change in EKYC norm?
No, because we are not doing EKYC earlier. We are using to do authentication through Aadhaar, which currently we are not able to do because of the regulatory requirement. However, Aadhaar for a credit bureau is allowed and we are doing it. So there's no impact because of that.
Sure. And just one last question. This is on slide 41. You know, we are just trying to understand if I look at the business from, from whatever, you know, the percentage-wise exposure across districts. And I'm looking at the last two columns, which is 2QFY19 and 3QFY19. Then there seems to be some swing between, you know, slightly higher business from, in the first line, which is 0.5%, and some decline in the second one again some increase between 1 to 3. So am I trying to kind of read too much into these numbers, or is there any specific trend that we are reading?
Oh, basically you are right, because this business where we started new districts, last quarter probably it is near to zero, and this quarter it is increased automatically, 0.05% numbers are increasing. because some more districts added during the last quarter, where the some numbers started coming in. So that's why the number has gone up, actually. New districts added, actually. So it is just an arithmetic thing. So it will actually change a bit more, going to higher penetration in the districts. In 2-3 quarters, you will see more changes, actually. And normally, you know, first 2 quarters, we will implement branches, and third quarter, fourth quarter, you start business there. That's why the total proportionate change happens in the 1 and 2 bucket on a continuous basis.
Sure. And
variation in our pattern of growing.
Sure. And just finally, if you could share the marginal cost, cost of borrowing of DA and securitization in the second and the third quarter.
Yeah. So we had raised DA, the DA one assignment deal was at 9.65. The other DA was around 9.8. And in the previous quarter, you're talking of second quarter, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to compare on a quarter-on-quarter basis how the difference was.
Yeah, third quarter was 9. One was 9.65, the other one was 9.8.
Mm-hmm. And second quarter?
In the second quarter, it was 8.9.
Sure. And on the securitization front?
Securitization front, it has been, the third quarter was around 9.35 in the third quarter.
Hmm.
In the second quarter, it was around 8.75.
Sure. Great. Those were my questions. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you.
Nischint.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, may we please request you to limit your questions to 2 per participant. Time permitting, you may come back in the queue for a follow-up question. We have a next question from the line of Nikhil Valecha of Sundaram Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question, sir. Could you please share PAR 0 and 30 for this quarter as well as the previous quarter? Also, if you could please share the PAR 0 for the state which had announced waiver recently, and in which state we had the highest PAR?
Yeah, there is a PAR 0 for the previous quarter to this quarter. PAR 0, it was 1.61 in the previous quarter, and this quarter it is 1.53. It is 9 bps reduction in this. And our total PAR less than 180 days is 0.52%. Okay. And there is no significant change in the states, whether it is MP or Chhattisgarh. There is no significant. It's very, very, very insignificant change because we don't have any impact because of any of such rumors or elections there. The PAR high state is still Maharashtra, particularly the Vidarbha region, actually. That continues to be because it takes some more time to get into normal. We expected that to take some more time to get into normal. Otherwise, no other variation in our portfolio quality.
Okay. And my second question is, has this liquidity crisis impacted smaller MFIs, and has it restricted funding to them, and which had helped us to capture some market share, or it has been business as usual?
Smaller MFIs' total market share itself is only 5-7%. It is not that the huge market which is available there too. So their operation is very, very small. It doesn't make much difference between these two. I mean, that variation, actually. It's impacted a bit who are dependent on NBFCs, actually. Those who are dependent on banks or participant certifications, PTCs, it's not impacted. Only where the NBFC, they are dependent, it has impacted. But the market share variation is not high because the proportion is very, very small, actually.
Okay. And, sir, if I can just ask one more. Is our ticket size similar across all the states, or it varies? I mean, the first-time ticket size.
Same all across in as per our approvals, but what we observe is the MP Chhattisgarh, the borrower was capacity to borrow is slightly lower, so we could see slightly lower ticket size in these two states.
And what would that be?
It's about 18,000 only there, actually, 18,000 to 20,000. In other states like Karnataka, Maharashtra, it's about 25,000 to 28,000.
Okay, sir. Thanks, sir. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Saurabh Dhule of Trivantage Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I have two questions. One is, can you throw some light on the floating provision policy that you follow? This is mainly because the kind of segment or the kind of business that you have is prone to cyclical downturns, and these can be very, very, you know, very, very deep. So that is one on your floating provisions. The second question is, in terms of the competitive landscape, now that we see many of these MFIs which have specially converted into SFBs, how do standalone or typical MFIs like yourselves, how do they compare or how do they compete with SFBs? Because SFBs generally would have a larger bouquet of products, and how do you plan to sustain or ring fence your borrowers from moving to SFBs, which have a larger product portfolio? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
I will talk about the floating provisions. Essentially, as you are aware, under India's regulation, we are supposed to follow the ECL methodology, and our ability to make any floating provisions is restricted in terms of the regulation. So effectively, we cannot do the any separate provisions. Any impairment that we need to carry out needs to come through the ECL methodology, which is currently evolving. Having said that, if you recall our during the IGAAP regulation note, when we were drawing our plans accounts, the provision that we followed was about 2%, although the regulatory percentage was 1%. What we try to do under Ind AS is that we try to compute the ECL methodology and have a level of management overlay above that to ensure that we still are in a position to have a slightly higher provision than what actually is required. So this is something that we plan to further improve as we go ahead. But a floating provision as a separate line item would not really be feasible under the regulation. And we hope to improve on the ECL and ensure that we are in a position to at least reach out to the level at which we feel we are comfortable with a provision, and we do have sufficient cushion to take any shocks. That's it. Maybe Uday, you can take the next question on the competition SFB.
Yes. Actually, no. SFB, yes, they have been the microfinance, and over a period they moved to bank and able to provide more book of services. But if you look at the landscape of data for last two quarters, the ability their view, if you look at SFB, microfinance portfolio is not growing. It's a growth is very, very small. Within the microfinance landscape, if you look at the MFIN data or if you look at other empiric data, SFB size of the microfinance portfolio is not growing. And the number of customers actually coming down. If you see the data, already it's data available, which shows that the potential growth from SFBs are not happening in this space at this point of time. Maybe they are diversifying more into different products and different, maybe personal loan or car loan, vehicle loan, home loan, that type of diversification process, which only provides more opportunity for MFIs like us. So that is what we see. Two is our rural focus, which always advantage for us, because most MFIs as well as SFBs are, if you see today, 62% of the business is in urban, whereas 82% of our business is in rural. So there's less of competition or less of overlap between us and SFB, and the potential sounds to be better for us in this space.
Okay. Just coming back to the first question, I did not understand which line item would that additional provision that you would take, where exactly would that appear?
We will not be able to ask Divakar.
The line item is under expenses, number 2, impairment of financial instruments. If you look at the format, this is a format given by SEBI and also the MCA in terms of how the Ind AS needs to be drawn up. There is no scope for any separate line item for floating provisions, and whatever needs to be built in has to be under one item through the ECL, which we are trying to suitably work around and improve in such a manner that we will have some cushion built up in the model itself, and which is an evolving one. This is the first year of Ind AS for everybody, and more so, everyone is trying to understand the ECL methodology, what is appropriate, and typically as an MFI, we have a challenge because we have never had defaults. Our PAR has been, I mean, historically, we have had a very low PAR. Our net and gross NPA has always been in that range of 1% maximum. And therefore, to build a model also for the ECL and have sufficient provisions is always a challenge. That's why we have provided with some management overlay and increase our provisions to some extent. But we will not be able to do any floating provisions. So,
however, maybe in the slide 26, you can see the point 4, which will give you the picture about it.
Slide 26. Okay, sir. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Anand Bhavnani of Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, can you give some sense of our new branch openings that you're planning for FY20 and what kind of overall ballpark AUM are we targeting for FY20 end?
Actually, Uday had mentioned this, that, you know, our expansion plans in terms of the branch opening and the branch size or whatever we do for a financial year is around 25 to 30% of our existing infrastructure. This is the way we have been always doing our business, and there is no change in our approach to building the business on similar lines in future. So we will be going around on similar pattern of growth expansion. And regarding guidance, we have already given for this financial year, which is already available in the slide. So
I think slide 36.
Yeah. So that's the guidance we have given for this financial year.
Sir, I was asking for more of FY20. So this financial year, we are close to kind of.
We will that guidance we will, as and when we, you know, we are you know, supposed to make it public and we firm up and when we are regulatorily you know, able to announce that, we will definitely let you know. As of now, the guidance that we have given is for the current financial year.
Sure. And sir, secondly, on leverage, what kind of, you know, peak leverage is the organization comfortable with, and you have kind of set a number to, and if you can share that number.
This was also asked earlier. We have built the business plan in such a manner that we will have a maximum leverage of 4x debt to equity. So, you know, it will be a total, we will be taking debt to the extent of a maximum of 4. So that's the plan in which we are comfortable with, and we have built the plan all along.
So, sir, given that we are currently under-levered in terms of securitizing and portfolio assignment, do we see that from here on you wouldn't be doing any such securitization?
Yeah, DA and securitization will be part of our normal fundraising plans, and as we grow ahead in future, the leverage will also certainly improve.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande of Smart Karma. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Just coming back to this, on the yield side, if you could share, you know, what was the yield? I understand on the slides you have a yield with the gains on the securitization. So excluding that, what was the yield on the portfolio in Q3 versus Q2?
The securitization income is part of yield calculation. So that's again something that's included, and that's part of interest income.
Yeah, I understand. So I'm just, okay, then to put it another way, what was the increase in rates you've taken for your borrowers? Like you have the 18% to 21, so what's any increase in the last quarter?
No, there has not been any change in the rates of on-lending to our borrowers. They continue to be in the range of 18 to 21%.
Okay, right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today's conference. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Uday Kumar Hebbar for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you all for your early morning time on this quite hectic day. I hope our clarifications were useful, and we look forward for a continued support. Have a nice budget day and take care.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Credit Access Grameen Limited, that concludes this conference.